You're listening to Straight Heat on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Patrick Creighton.
All right, joining us on the hotline right now, he covers MMA and combat sports for CBS Sports. He's Brian Campbell. What's going on, Brian?
Fired up as usual.
Well, that is glorious. So let me ask you a couple of things before we get into some of the stuff that's going to be coming up going on soon. One would be, I just find this to be interesting. Chuck Liddell and Tito Ortiz are going to fight on a Golden Boy card. Now, aside from Oscar De La Hoya's weird things with kitchen utensils, this is the guy that wanted Conor McGregor to fight Canelo Alvarez and said how great it would be for MMA and boxing if Canelo and Conor fought and it would be this great thing for both sports. And then when Conor took the fight with Mayweather for way more money instead, he took every chance he could to bury the fight, say it was trash. Conor had no business being in the ring. It's an embarrassment. Why would a pair of MMA legends sign on with a guy who trashes their sport?
Well, I think we know the answer to that, right? It's certainly money. It's certainly because nobody else is willing to pay these MMA legends to fight in their promotion right now. Although, look, Bellator MMA, for as much as I love them, it's not out of the realm for them to put on a fight like this. But De La Hoya, like a lot of boxing promoters, or really promoters in general, will give you that double speak constantly. Look, Oscar De La Hoya is my favorite boxer in history, and I've been covering that sport a long time, and he sort of regularly breaks your heart in the balance of truth and lies that he gives you. But my biggest question is this. You know, it's great to hear De La Hoya say, I'm only doing this because the MMA fighters these days are paid so little and they always come to me and complain about it, which is, you know, from his position, is really a load of crap to hear him say that. And then this is the debut card he's going to put out and try to say, hey, MMA fighters of the world, come sign with me. I don't see how anyone, unless he literally digs into the over 40 retired Hall of Fame crowd, is going to fill out a promotion for him. I'm not joking around. I feel like this is a one-and-done Golden Boy MMA card. You just hope for their sake that they don't lose their shirts.
Now, Tony Ferguson, Anthony Pettis, they get added to the Khabib and Conor card. Now, I know they list them as, like, co-main event, but that's not really a co-main event, is it?
I think it's going to be. It's really more of an insurance policy, obviously, for the recent trend of guys missing weight, late injuries. They don't want to have another UFC 223 on their hands in Brooklyn when it was, you know, hey, is there any active lightweights who can make weight this second that want to get in there and fight for a title? So it's certainly smart in that regard. I just don't understand what Tony Ferguson is doing, taking this kind of chance, coming off this big of an injury when he's got a 10-fight win streak, when he was already the interim champion and they took it away from him. Nobody's more deserving for a title shot than him. I think he's really risking a lot. Now, MMA fighters tend to do this. They tend to risk a lot because the reward is big. And certainly if he defeats Pettis here, if he doesn't already get in this fight by way of injury or missed weight cut for Conor or Khabib, you'd think Tony's going to be in line next. So you get why he's doing it. I just think it's a big-time gamble, knowing what's at stake for him. That 10-fight win streak is great, but if he loses to Pettis, you can kiss those title hopes goodbye.
And you mentioned coming off the injury, torn LCL. His last fight was just about a year ago. So
he's 34. We love Tony Ferguson, but he is 34 in the deepest and most competitive division in the whole sport.
He's Brian Campbell from CBS Sports with us on the hotline. Brian, there was a story that came out earlier today that, I don't know, it's a little disturbing, to be honest with you. And I know that, you know, the women fighters, the world is different than the men fighters. And I know that Brazilian fighters, again, the world is different. But this story about Jessica Andrade having to sell her UFC equipment to be able to afford to finish camp to take fights. Is this something that is specific to her, specific to women fighters, specific to Brazilian fighters? Is this something that's a lot more common than we realize, that she's selling UFC clothes and gloves so that she can make enough money to finish her training camp to take a fight?
Yeah, this is interesting. I've never heard to the point of actually selling the merchandise that she needs to fight in order to take the fight, but you know, we've long talked about and heard about the disparity in pay in MMA, you know, speak of the devil with Oscar De La Hoya, but we've seen fighter one exclusively, we've seen Michael McDonald, the fighter who fights with Bellator now, was a UFC fighter for a while until big injuries. There was a point in his comeback from injury where he told the UFC, "I want to fight really bad. You want to give me a fight? I literally can't afford a proper training camp financially in the situation I'm in now unless you front me some money." So we've seen this a few times. I obviously can't speak to Andrade's specific financial situation. This is just sort of the overall look. We know why UFC was able to sell for $4.4 billion a couple years ago. The financial model seemed to be tilted in the control in their favor, unlike we've seen in really any other sport. You want to see this not happen again. We want to see, you know, higher pay for fighters that are on, you know, main TV undercards and are only getting, what, you know, $30,000 to show and $30,000 if they win. We want to see that go away. But, man, do we certainly want to see this type of thing go away. Somebody like Andrade, who's a title challenger, is probably going to get a second chance at a title if she wins next weekend at UFC 228 against Carolina Kovalkiewicz. I mean, this is a really sort of eye-opening thing. How do you fix it? You fix that disparity in terms of what the fighters get paid.
Now, you referenced her fight with Carolina coming up. Is how do you see that fight going on? I mean, is Andrade a big favorite for this fight, or do you think this is a close fight?
Yeah, I think this is a really close fight and a real 50-50 pick 'em. And certainly they both have a real strong common opponent. You can look back when they both lost title bouts to Joanna Jędrzejczyk in the past 2 years when she was on top of that strawweight division and lost it competitively. Now, while Andrade's fight may have been more one-sided, she never stopped coming forward for all five of those rounds and was willing to take any damage. And the subsequent two wins she's recorded since then shows you that she's learning on the go. I mean, this is somebody who used to be a bantamweight, cut that much weight to come down, reinvented herself. I think she's getting better every fight. And certainly we saw Kovalkiewicz push, you know, Jędrzejczyk to a point that until she ended up losing to Nama Yunus, we'd really never seen before. I think you're going to see fireworks knowing the stand-up game between these two. I think you're going to see fireworks knowing the hunger to get back into the title picture. We love Rose Nama Yunus, but I'm sure both of them believe that they can beat her. They know how tough Joanna was. This is a great opportunity for them. If you got to favor one thing, look, Andrade is tough. She seems to be getting better every fight. Big-time striker, great chin for the role she's on, but like I said, 50-50, both coming off of two-fight win streaks, both right on the edge there in that pound-for-pound of really making some noise.
You know, it's funny you mentioned the fight with Andrade and Joanna, because I remember watching that fight, and, you know, Andrade looked like the bigger fighter, the stronger fighter, the thicker fighter, and Joanna just outsmarted her. There was just a lot of cage savvy that Joanna had, and it just felt like she was just leading around like a bull. You know, she's the bullfighter, just dragging Andrade around, drag her around, counter her, pop her, make her think, make her doubt herself, because just on fear, pure physicality, Andrade should have killed her.
Certainly. But, you know, I do give Andrade the credit for never backing down, and also she landed a couple big shots in those final two rounds that showed you she wasn't even remotely discouraged. I think Carolina more of a skilled fighter, but I just see a hungry fighter in Andrade who just won't be denied. I feel like before that career ends, she's going to be wearing that belt.
All right, the other, you know, there's three big women's fights on that card. You have Carla Esparza, Tatiana Suarez, and then Valentina Shevchenko against Nico Montano. That is this Shevchenko fight, is it almost expected Valentina's going to take this belt?
It is. I mean, this is as weird and rare a situation you've seen. I mean, she's the largest favorite for a title challenger by far in UFC history. I mean, I haven't looked at the odds in about a week and a half, but what was it, you know, minus 1,000 at some point? I mean, it was just some absurd number when that line opened up. And for Nico Montano, I mean, look, it's not only an uphill battle for her to win this fight. I mean, she's a heavy underdog coming in as the champion in the first defense of that, you know, 125-pound title's history. But I think she's got an uphill battle to not finish her career as just a trivia question, just a historical footnote. I mean, for as underwhelming as, let's say, Jermaine Durandamy's featherweight title run was a couple of years ago when she got stripped of the belt after beating Holly Holm, the creation of this division at 125 came at a point where it didn't seem like UFC maybe needed it, like they cared much about it, launching that Ultimate Fighter season. But, you know, that victory for Montano over Roxy Modafari was one of the more underwhelming title fights, title wins you've ever seen. And she's just at a complete disadvantage in every category against somebody like Shevchenko, who's, you know, among the top four or five best pound-for-pound women in the world. Throughout her UFC run, what are the flaws, right? Two close decision losses to bantamweight champion Amanda Nunes. One, you certainly could have said Shevchenko could have won that, and now she's moving down to what is her natural weight. She looked fantastic in her debut. You could argue they kind of created this division for her or for Joanna if she eventually moves up. And this just feels like you said, it's an afterthought. It's put the crown on her already. I don't see anywhere where Montano, who, you know, even getting to this point has been an underdog run, has a shot in this fight.
So I'm with Brian Campbell, covers combat sports, MMA for CBS Sports. Brian, Nick Diaz, all charges against him dropped in Clark County. Nick Diaz, I know he's got a name. I know he's got a following. He hasn't fought in going on 4 years. Is there anything left to his career, or is he just going to be a guy who, you know, runs his mouth, pops up, you know, on the news feed every now and then, but he's never really getting back in a cage?
I mean, you think financially he's got to just cash himself out to a degree, right? Where, you know, the Diaz brothers, they're so mercurial. You never know to fully believe them or fully believe Dana White, the UFC president, when he's trashing them in terms of, you know, they don't want any fights. They're turning down fights left or right. At some point, the money's got to run out, and he's going to need to come back. You know, he's 35, 36 years old. The window is closing. How much will we actually see him? I feel like you're only going to see him pop back in there to be the B-side in a big, fun fight, maybe one or two more times. And his recent track record isn't showing you necessarily that there's reason to believe he's got a title run in him or even a serious run of any kind in him. I mean, you mentioned we haven't seen him in over 3 years. He's had two drug suspensions since then. When was his last win? You got to go back to 2011 against BJ Penn. It's been 7 years since this guy's won a fight. I love him. I think UFC has, for all the trouble that the Diaz brothers bring and how much they don't, you know, follow the rules, so to speak, I think they've been badly underpromoted. I think they both could be stars right now. But even with that argument said, it's hard to trust or believe Nick's even going to show up. If they can get him propped back up for one more big fight, whether it be a GSP rematch, you know, whatever creative sort of matchmaking you can do, just like his last fight against Anderson Silva, which was that same idea, just, you know, what's the most creative fight we can do to just get him in there? You know, it'll be fun. We'll enjoy it. But I feel like not only did UFC miss a little bit of what could have happened with him, certainly Nick, his career just sort of fell off the side of the earth. And, you know, and the Diaz brothers, it's hard to figure them out mentally. They seem to be okay with it. It's just sort of the way it is, the Stockton code.
Brian, your thoughts on Ronda Rousey and the WWE?
She's exceeding expectations inside the ring. I'll give her that. I thought WWE and the build to WrestleMania, let's say, didn't put her in the best situations to succeed in terms of letting her be on the microphone too long when it was just obvious she didn't have the juice in that category. But what she does inside the ring performance-wise, that WrestleMania match, I mean, she stole the show. Subsequent appearances on Raw, she's showing you that she's an above-average athlete who's a natural at this. She has a speed and a technique to her move sets that I think is really unique to any man or woman. So they've got something here. They fast-tracked the belt on her. You just want to see her put in lights where she can shine. They're giving her the poor man's, let's say, Steve Austin-level booking where she's just this badass with no rules. I think ultimately a heel turn is where she's going to have her finest moments in WWE, where she may, you know, for as long as she's going to be there. She told me herself a couple weeks ago at SummerSlam, I got vicious baby fever right now. She doesn't know how long she's going to be doing this, but she's having a great time. And it's really, you know, there's no limits to what she can do, because when you have that big of a star who gets the business, and this is fun for her, this is not a chore, they got big plans for her.
Brian Campbell, CBS Sports, covers combat sports. Follow him on Twitter at BCampbellCBS, BCampbellCBS. Brian, lots of great stuff, buddy. Appreciate your time. Let's catch up soon.
Awesome. Great talking to you.
All right, Brian Campbell, CBS, with us on the hotline. Wrapping it up next is a Straight Eight.